Well, I am honored to be here. I never thought I would be here. I love the Australian shouting. I don't know anything that you're saying, but I know that I would agree. Well, you're so, thank you. This is my last night in Australia. I've been here 2.5 weeks. This is my 7th city, and I'm just absolutely in love with your country, and I mean that. And I will be back. I've spent my whole life thinking about coming here. I'm 55, so that's like 50 years. And I grew up in a country that just idolized Australia. We just loved it. Everything about it. I grew up in a surf community. We thought your surfers, all of whom are named Shane, I think, at the time, we thought they were the coolest. We thought all of your women were like Elle Macpherson, like every woman in Australia looks like Elle Macpherson. And that everybody in Australia is attacked by some sort of deadly animal every day of the week and thinks nothing of it. And that's all kind of true, I've decided. It's all sort of true. It's the most beautiful country I've ever been to, the most lightly populated. And it has functional cities, which is something I'm not used to at all. You know, in where I live, it's like, it's incredibly beautiful, but you have to escape the cities. Here you go to the cities and they're great. You're like, I could live here if I could afford it, which I can't. I love your profanity, not all of which I understand, but it's used liberally. Words we don't have, I'm not going to repeat them. I repeated them the other night to people. They're like, oh, that's a bad word. I was like, we don't even have that word. I have no idea what it means. It's like swearing in Mandarin. It doesn't offend me, you know? And I think I, above all, like, if I'm being honest, this is a little syrupy, but I'm leaving tomorrow, so I'll just be honest. But I love how much you love animals. I just love that. And it's a very Anglo quality. It's part of the culture that we share, you know, all derived from the UK. But I've never seen it at this scale. And before I came here, I mean, I had heard accounts of many people who had come here who would say, you know, that old cliche about how every animal in Australia is looking to kill you. That's all true. And the Australians aren't bothered by it. That turns out to be true also. But it's deeper than that. I thought it was just bravery and sort of devil-may-care nonchalance, which is clearly true, but it's also like such a profound love of animals. The other night, 2 nights ago, we were having dinner and people were telling me about your magpies and how they dive bomb people. And this woman said, I didn't know if this was like one of those drop bear or hoop snake stories designed to like scare the foreigners, or I didn't know if they were being serious, because in my country, magpies are just chirpy birds, but here they're deadly. And she's telling me how the mailmen, posties, I think she called them, wear helmets with spikes on top to keep the birds off. And I'm like, that's not real. Oh, it's totally real. And then she shows me videos of it. I'm like shocked by the whole thing. And then she goes, you know, they're highly intelligent. I was like, yeah, you should shoot them. And then you just kill like the first year's worth and all the other magpies will get together and be like, let's leave the mailman alone, you know, because they're smart. This woman looked at me like I was a child molester or a freak. She's like, shoot them? No. And I said, you know, in my country, I mean, I love animals. I live with animals, but I also hunt birds. But our rule is, if the animal's trying to kill you, that's a violation of the creation contract as outlined in Genesis 2, which is you have dominion over them. Like, they're not, you know, we can all live kind of peacefully together, but if you try and kill me, then I have to, you know, fight back, and having free will and opposable thumbs, like, I'm going to win. And this woman looked at me, honestly, like I was a monster. Like, no. And then that reminded me of a conversation I had the week before where this guy's telling me how he found a brown snake in his garage. And I was like, the brown snake, like the world famous, like second most poisonous snake in the world? He goes, yeah. And I thought, if I found a brown snake in my garage, well, I'd burn the garage down, obviously, immediately. I just toss a cup of gasoline in there and torch it. It's well worth it, insured or not. And then I'd call the army to kill all the other, I mean, brown snakes don't live alone. They're produced by other brown snakes. And obviously, we need to commit brown snake genocide just for our own survival. I said, and I'm not joking at all. And I said, what'd you do? He goes, my wife tossed me a broom and I shoot it out. And he wasn't kidding at all. And I realized these are people who love animals so much that killing them is like not only a last resort, it's like kind of horrifying. It's horrifying. And I thought, what a wonderful and true reflection of the character of the country, because love of animals is the beginning of decency. Because you have control over animals. They're a version of children. Unlike children, if you mistreat your kids, like they turn 18 and they, you know, they hate you and they go on a campaign against you and become drug addicts. But animals, you can do whatever you want to them and there's nothing they can ever do. And so that is the measure of who you really are, how you treat the defenseless, the helpless, people or animals for whom you're responsible. You have dominion over them. You're responsible for them. In some cases, their care. And that increases your responsibility to be kind and decent to them. And so I really think that is the clearest picture of who you are, and I could not be more impressed. And I also would say, as a policy matter, that that should be, honestly, should be your standard for who you let into your country. You can't live in Australia unless you love animals. I mean, I don't think you're allowed even to bring cigarettes into your country. You certainly can't bring firearms. Why would you bring people who hate animals or who don't respect them or who eat endangered animals for fun? Like, no. I'm actually not kidding at all. You should make that your standard because above all, you want to keep your country decent. And that is the measure of decency. And you have a right to do that. You have a right to observe your national character, particularly if your national character is good, which yours is. It is good. That's exactly right. And what's so interesting, you know, of all the countries being targeted for destruction, which is, you know, the entire English-speaking world, I mean, that's obviously true, you know, there's a case to be made against some of those countries. I mean, they sort of did bad things in the past. No one currently living, but you can look at the history of certain countries. I'm not pointing out any in particular, Great Britain, but, you know, you could say, well, you know, we're wrecking the country because of the sins of its ancestors. What exactly were your sins? I think you guys got sent here. By the way, everyone I ask, when I was like, why were your ancestors sent here? It's always the same answer. You know what it is? Stealing a loaf of bread. I don't believe that for a second, by the way. I just don't believe that. It was armed robbery in every case, but it's like, oh, stealing a loaf of bread. Yeah, okay, right. But anyway, not only did you not do anything wrong, this was the prison that you turned into paradise. You have nothing to apologize for at all. And yet, at every turn, they're making you apologize. I have never seen a society more under attack than the one you're living in now, and for less justification. Every time a commercial airline lands, every time any kind of ceremony opens, they send you the message that you're on someone else's land. And I'm thinking to myself, look, and this is no slight against the people they're talking about at all, but it's, I don't know, it's Australian land, and you're all Australians. And, you know, I guess my first question is, why would you ever put up with that? And that's not a question that I can answer because I'm not Australian. I didn't hear what you said, but I think I agree with you. But my second question is, who is this helping? Who is this helping? Is it helping the people who are supposedly being honored by these displays? No, of course not. It has nothing to do with them. Now, we have something very similar going on in my country where the people in charge trying to make you feel bad about things that people you never met did hundreds of years ago, but your feeling bad doesn't help the people they claim to represent whose lives are getting steadily worse every year. So it's not really about the past, which cannot be fixed. It's about the future. And what is the future that they have planned for you? Of course. If they're telling you, because what is the message? Well, the message is it's not your country. Well, that's exactly what the message is. It's very explicit. I went to church yesterday. I went to see the church in the denomination that I belong to, or did before I left because it became pagan. But I went, you have a giant cathedral in this city built by, you know, my denomination, which is the Church of England, I'm ashamed to say. And as I walked in, there's not one thing about God, of course. That's like way, way in the past. There's a huge sign saying basically we apologize for having this church here because we stole the land. And I thought, you know, I'm not sure, again, who that helps, but I'm pretty sure I know the purpose of it. If at every turn they're telling you it's not your country, a country that, by the way, your ancestors built, and they did an amazing job, amazing, amazing. I'd say, and this is not flattery. I mean, I'm literally leaving tomorrow early, so I can say whatever I want, and you can't do anything about it. So I'll be back in the United States, which is 10,000 miles from here, so I'm being completely honest. The amount of effort that previous generations of Australians went into building this country is just shocking to me. I had no idea Australia was so rich in the 19th century. Wool apparently was a really good business, wool and gold, note to self. But they didn't just take the money and build private villas. They spent a huge percentage of it on public works and built these remarkable... I'm coming from a country with decayed cities, and I went out to Perth, and of course everyone on the East Coast makes fun of Perth relentlessly, but in a very sort of dry, passive-aggressive Australian way. And I don't know anything about it. It's not my world. So I'm like, I'm going to Perth tomorrow. What's that like? Oh, well, it's far away. What does that mean? What? It means we don't like Perth. So I was not expecting much. And I was shocked by it. It was like a San Francisco without the junkies. It was like one of the prettiest places I've ever been. And I feel that way about all of your cities. So, somebody spent a lot of years and a lot of money and a lot of back-breaking effort to build what you have now. And it's just remarkable. But rather than being proud of it, the people who run your country are telling you you should be ashamed of it and that it doesn't belong to you. You have no claim to it at all. So the conventional understanding of this is, well, this is just what it is to be guilty. You're in a prosperous country and you feel guilty. But that's not actually what it's about. Because making people feel guilty doesn't help anybody, right? No. They're telling you it's not your country so that they can take it away from you and you won't resist when they do. Because it doesn't belong to you in the first place. And if there's one message that I hope I could pass on, and by the way, I feel a little guilty lecturing you about your country since I've been here 2 weeks and I know nothing, and there's nothing worse than a foreigner lecturing you about your own country. I'm thinking through the hostility I feel when Bono comes to my country and starts lecturing me. Go back to Dublin or whatever, you know what I mean? Please leave, foreigner. So I don't want to be that preachy person at all. I'm saying this with respect, but with actual concern. I'm telling you, anyone who tells you this is not your country will take it away from you and plans to do that. And they do plan to do that. That's super obvious to me. It's really obvious to me. And this is not an attack on, any other country. By the way, I know you all are completely paranoid about China. And you have every reason to be. I don't fault the Chinese for that. If I were the Chinese, the first thing I would do is take over Australia. It's the first thing I would do. I've got a country of 1.4 billion that's crowded with not enough natural resources and not that far away as an entire continent with 26 million people. It's got more resources they could ever use. I'd take over that country immediately. And I wouldn't do it with warships. I'd just buy their politicians. And my sense is yours aren't very expensive at all. In fact, one hilarious thing I've noticed, again, since I don't know anything about Australia, so you ask really stupid questions, so I learned that one of your parties is the Labor Party, and it's the party of labor union. Boo, okay. No, but this is the hilarious part from my perspective. So I'm like going through the list of leaders, and I'm like, okay, what trade are they in? Are they electricians, forklift drivers, plumbers, miners? None of them's ever had a job. There's no actual labor in the leadership of the Labor Party. They're all parasites on the taxpayer. It's hilarious. You don't see the humor in that when the laziest people in your country call themselves the Labor Party? Really, if you're the Labor Party, why don't you get a job? None of them ever had a job. They can't do anything. Oh, it's so funny. Can you change the tire of my truck? My air conditioner broke. Can you get over here and fix it? Oh, I'm sorry. You've only worked in the government? Why don't you go away and shut up? And the last thing you're allowed to do is tell me that it's not my country when you have literally no skills. You would starve to death without your job. I mean, trust me. I'm not making fun. I live in a country, that's run by the exact same kind of people. Joe Biden has been leeching off the taxpayer since I was 3 years old and I'm 55. Actually. My entire lifetime, Joe Biden has been getting rich without working at taxpayer expense. And also, this may be recognizable, selling influence to China. But I'm just here to tell you, as a representative from a country that's sort of farther on down the road, that it absolutely does not end well at all. And we've lived with this for many years. We also, by the way, didn't understand that the purpose of making native-born Americans feel guilty about living in America was not to right any historic injustice. It was not to help any marginalized group. They have zero interest in that, obviously. Our marginalized groups have become more marginalized over the past 50 years of talking about them incessantly. They're doing worse. They haven't been helped at all. So that's not the point. By the way, if that was the point, I'd be like, well, you know, okay. I get a lecture once in a while, my taxes are higher, but at least it's helping somebody. I guess I'm liberal enough to think that's, you know, I could probably live with that. But if the people they're supposedly helping are getting more desperate every year, my country's getting crappier every year, maybe that's not the point. And I suspect, I'm just guessing, that you're living with something very, very similar. Yes. So I would, look, I know the United States is a long way away. It's 10,000 miles for me to get home. I'm going to make a suggestion. I would suggest that every person in this room scrimp and save for however long it takes and buy a round-trip ticket to London in the next couple years. No, I'm serious. Because, like, a lot, I have the great advantage of coming from a country that was born in dislike of the English, even though, obviously, I am part English, heavily English. I'm a self-hating Briton. But in my country, you know, we exist because we broke off from Great Britain. But the three other countries that didn't, which would be Australia, New Zealand, and Canada, all three have this attitude that Britain is somehow kind of the mothership still. It's like the most impressive place. And these attitudes come from that country. And you should go see it. It's disgusting. No, I'm serious. It's disgusting. And from 1945 until present, Britons have been told that you're terrible, that you're somehow guilty of some non-specified crime. Normal people are the criminals in Great Britain. And by employing that method of psychological control, that PSYOP, which is exactly what it is, they have managed to turn that country into a slum. And if you haven't been there recently, you should. And I was thinking about it this week when Julian Assange finally got out of a British prison after 5.5 years. I visited him there a few months ago at Belmarsh. I got so upset sitting in my barn in Maine in the middle of nowhere thinking about Assange that I just called his wife and said, I want to come over and see him, which I did. And I visited him at the prison, and the prison was slightly better than the surrounding city, I thought, just in terms of cheerfulness. But no, it was. I'm serious. It is a fog-shrouded slum. But I asked her and him, we're meeting with him there, at Belmarsh, after being strip-searched. I managed to get my nicotine pouches in anyway. Yeah, that's right. Some things are worth committing crimes for. But anyway, not to brag. I'm never going there again, so I can say this. But I said to you, like, what have you been charged with? Nothing. Never charged with a crime in Great Britain. And they held him in maximum security, basically trying to torture him to death for 5.5 years. After 7 years locked away in the Ecuadorian embassy, never charged him with a crime. And I thought to myself, this is a criticism, but I mean it in the best way. Like, what about your country of birth? Where are they in this? Why didn't you sail a warship up the Thames and get your man out? And I'll tell you exactly why, which is because your leaders genuflect before that country. And they shouldn't, because the truth is, they have no moral authority. This is such a nicer place than that. You should go from your cities to their cities and ask a really simple question. Who's doing a better job? You are. You're doing a better job. And you should also go, because that could be your future if you don't get control. And by get control, I mean you cannot allow them to make you feel guilty for being Australian, that you cannot allow them to tell you this is not your nation when your ancestors built it, you were born here, you pay taxes to that government. No, it doesn't help anybody. It doesn't mean you're sensitive. It means you are craven and being prepared to be hurt. And I think it's already happening. I was so impressed by a couple of your cities, I'll just give you a perfect example, that I started looking up your real estate listings. Because I thought, I don't know if I'm welcome here, probably not, but if I ever made any money, I'd like to get a place here because it's like unbelievable, it's so pretty, and the people are so nice. And I do want to see the attacking magpies, so I was like, I definitely want to come back. So I'd heard it was kind of, well, I was in Sydney 2 days ago, I looked it up, and then I thought, well, obviously this is in lira or pesos or something, this is not, these are not real numbers. And I was, I was like, well, it is the Australian dollar, you know? And so I got my little calculator out and did the conversion rate. And even after discounting by whatever, 25%, it was so much more than I could afford. And I have a, you know, decent job. I was like, how does anybody live here? How does the average Australian making, I don't even know what your average wage is, 100 grand, something in that range-ish? No, that's too high? How do you live here? I mean, that's like... Exactly. So then I asked someone I was traveling with, your housing prices, and not just on Sydney Harbor, but just like normal houses, you know, far from Sydney Harbor, are so expensive. How does anybody live here? And this person said, well, increasingly they don't. They have to leave. A lot of homeless people all of a sudden. I said, that sounds like a crisis. Why is it happening? Well, one of the reasons it's happening is a principle we call supply and demand. And when there's a greater demand for something than there is a supply, the price rises. And that is purely a matter of population. If you have more people than you have houses, guess what happens to housing prices? They rise. This is the most obvious principle in nature and real estate. And so if I'm running a country, one of my top concerns is making sure that young people, people in their, say, late 20s, early 30s, can afford a house. Because my main goal is to create households and a new generation of Australians or Americans or Kiwis or whatever. And so if it becomes too difficult, too expensive for your children to buy a house in the country they were born in, you're erased. That's it. Your line ends. And that's what's happening. You see it in the birth rates. This is true in my country too. This is not a lecturing of you. I'm watching this happen. And in Canada, it's completely out of control. So why is it happening? Immigration. There's only one reason. That's the reason. And nobody wants to say that because it sounds like an attack on immigrants, which, you know, and by the way, that's how they get you to shut up. Shut up, racist. Okay, got it. But I'll just speak as honestly as I possibly can. The last group I hate are immigrants. I actually really like immigrants to my country. I'll just say my country. And we've let in 30 million illegally in the last 4 years. That's more than your entire population. So that's a crime. That's the greatest crime in American history. It totally destroyed my country. But I'm still not mad at the people who came because I would too. That's how I feel about immigration. You're coming to my country because you think it's the greatest in the world. Well, we're in agreement on that. I'm flattered by immigration, by the desire of people from around the world to come to my country. I would want to go there also. It's like people saying your wife is hot. Yeah, I think so. Thank you. You can't have her, but I'm glad that you noticed. So it's not an attack on immigrants. They always try to make it about immigrants. Oh, you're attacking immigrants. No, I'm attacking you, actually. I like the immigrants. I don't like you. And the reason I don't like you, leader of my country, is because this policy is making it impossible for our children to live here and to have the lives that we provided for them. Not, you know, crazy fancy lives, but like a middle-class house with 3 bedrooms on a quarter acre. Is that too much to ask? It shouldn't be. Especially in a country the size of a continent where nobody lives in the middle of it. It's like a donut. It's bizarre. I flew over it. There's nobody here. So all of a sudden, if your children can't afford a house here, then you have one person to blame, and that's the people who run your government. And by the way, nobody does, because you're not allowed to. And by the way, in Great Britain, for example, Canada, for example, your closest cousins, your parent and first cousin, people go to jail for noticing. You literally go to jail. You don't like what the government's doing to you? Shut up, racist, and you go to jail. They send people to jail. UK, they send people to jail every day. And not for standing in, you know, Hyde Park and screaming, but for writing it on Facebook. So imagine a government that totally destroys the country, which is criminal behavior, and then criminalizes complaining about it. That's not a legitimate government. That's a tyranny. That's a tyranny. And if that were happening in some widely recognized tyrannical country, East Germany, 1975, where everyone's under surveillance. By the way, I don't think East Germany, 1975, which was famously the most surveilled nation in the history of the world, I don't think they had seatbelt cameras. I don't. No, they didn't. That was too far even for Eric Honecker. He's like, you know, that's old fascist for me. I can't do it. So these countries have become, including my own, have become surveillance states. And the point of that surveillance is not to keep you safe. It's to punish you for noticing what they're doing to your country, actually. That's not the behavior of a legitimate government. And if you think that's like a right-wing point, you've bought the lies. That's not a right-wing point. That's a simple observation about human rights. No privacy, no freedom. Not to mention the endless hectoring. No, it's not your country. I went to buy a pack of cigarettes today. I quit smoking 10 years ago, but I thought, you know, you can kind of judge a country by its cigarettes. Couldn't find them. I went to this tobacco store. I said, this is a tobacco store. You don't have any cigarettes? Oh, there's a really nice Pakistani guy. He's like kind of shaking his head like, I know it's crazy. Opens up this cabinet. And I said, what? That's like, what the hell is on your cigarettes? Like, I don't even want to smoke them looking at that. I was like, you're making me not want to smoke, Mr. Tobacco Store Guy. And he goes, I know. And every pack had like a rotted tongue on it or something. And again, I don't smoke cigarettes anymore. But I'm an adult man who pays his taxes. If I wanted to, I should be allowed to, right? You can do fentanyl here with the government's help. But you can't smoke a Marlboro without being lectured? I did ask how much they cost. It was $60 for a deck of 20. And I said to the guy, I don't want to smoke. And I've never said that in my life. And I know everyone's like, well, smoking's bad. Yeah, of course smoking's bad. Lots of things are bad. But it's not really anyone's business, is it? I guess wearing a seatbelt's a good idea. I mean, I don't, but my kids say it's a good idea. But when they're forcing you to do things for your own good, over time you question, like, is this really for my own good, or are they just softening me up to obey? So when it really comes down to it, when they want to inject me with some creepy compound that hasn't been tested, that they'll be able to, like, shoot me with a rubber bullet if I decline. And I'll be so trained to be obedient that I'll kind of put up with it. And I won't do what I should do, which is stage, like, I don't want to say I don't want to get arrested. I shouldn't put up with that. Because that is not a free country. That's a tyranny. And you have absolutely no obligation under the most basic precepts of human rights and natural law to put up with that for 1 second. Period. They are the criminals. You are not the criminals. They don't care about your country, which belongs to you. So when they tell you it's not your country, that you're on someone else's land and you should feel bad about that, how is that a democracy? It's not a democracy. Because what's the basic idea of democracy? The citizens own the country. It's their country. It's not feudal land. They're not living here at the pleasure of the Lord. They can't just be shot with rubber bullets if they disagree with his decrees, because they own it. They're not renters, they're owners. That's the basic idea of democracy. However it's administered, whether it's a parliamentary system, whether it's direct democracy as in Athens, whether it's a constitutional republic, representative democracy is the one that I live in, the idea never changes. The country belongs to its people, period. And if they're telling you at every landing of every commercial flight, in every government speech, at the entrance to the Anglican Church in downtown St. Paul's, that it's not your country, you cannot put up with that. Yeah, you cannot put up with that. Because you know what's going to happen is what's happening now. Which is they will completely change your country, make your life much worse, make it absolutely impossible for your children to have the lives that you gave them. In other words, for your civilization to continue, because that's what that is. They will eliminate all of that, and you won't be able to say a word, because why are you complaining? It's not your country. And I can promise you that in 50 years, what you have will not exist. It will not exist. I'm sorry to say that out loud. The only reason I'm saying that, it's such a heavy thing to say, and it makes me, you know, I feel a little rude saying it. But I just liked what I've seen so much. I've been so impressed by this country that I think to myself, really, the only way you could wreck a place like this is on purpose. Really, is on purpose. You don't need anything here. Hearing about your energy costs, like, almost drove me, I almost put my fist through the wall. Someone's saying, well, I can't do that. I was asking, like, dumb questions. Like, you have, you know, the world's largest deposits of iron ore from which steel is made. And I said, well, how many steel mills? Well, none. Why? because energy's too expensive. I said, well, too bad you don't have any thermal coal here. Oh, wait, you have the world's largest deposits of thermal coal? In the world? So why do you have such high energy costs? Well, because we sell our coal to China, which uses it to make renewables, which we then buy back. Okay. Okay. Whoever thought of that hates you. I'm just being honest. That's not an accounting error. That was not a mistake made in good faith. It's not like the accountants over at Parliament House or whatever they call it. They're like, look at the books one day and be like, you know, all those estimates we had about wind farms, it actually doesn't add up. That we sell our country's resources to a faraway country to make something that doesn't work and then pay extra for it. Like, they knew that wasn't going to work when they did it, obviously, because that's insane. It's prima facie insane. The fact that you have high energy costs is reason enough to get rid of the people who run in your country. Because guess what? Everybody else knows, except the English-speaking countries, including mine, which are on one level the most impressive countries that have ever existed in human history, clearly, certainly the kindest and most decent. Well, they gave us science, okay? You know, they invented the airplane. They're the most impressive societies ever created, but they're also on some level the most naive or the dumbest. What everybody understands around the world is that there's a direct line between cheap energy and civilization. The cheaper energy you have, the fewer babies who die when they're born, period. The cheaper energy you have, you know, the fewer women get worn out by life in their mid-30s. I mean, go to countries with expensive energy in the developing world, and you will see the physical toll on people from having to live in a society where they can't afford energy. I mean, it wears people out. It wrecks their lives. We're happy because we have cheap energy in a lot of ways. And so if they're intentionally making it more expensive, just like if they're making it impossible for your kids to buy houses, or if they're shooting you with rubber bullets, at some point, you have to connect the dots and say, these people aren't just neglecting me, they hate me. There's no other explanation for that. By the way, if this were happening in a family, so the model of for all human organizations is the family, which is the building block of any civilization. Mom, dad, kids. I know they're trying to scramble that a little bit. Future generations will look back on this and be like, that was the craziest thing that ever happened. That ever happened. I have an idea. Why don't you castrate your children? Yeah. By the way, I thought the government, when I was a kid, I know I'm digressing, but there's just so much. This country is so close to the country I live in, it's like really weird. It's like running into a relative you didn't know you had, and like, wow, we look alike. How strange. Except you use the word wanka, and I don't know what that means. But in every other way, it's my new favorite word, by the way. I'm putting it in my suitcase for the trip home tomorrow. I'm going to unveil it at dinner parties. And I'm never going to ask anybody what it means because I know it's something bad. But if I know, then I won't be able to say it with a straight face. But I'm going to drop that, no exaggeration, the second I get home at dinner. I'll be like, you're all wankas. I learned that from my Australian friends. Excuse me. Anyway, but the building block of any civilization is, of course, the family, the nuclear family. Husband, wife, children, because that mirrors the natural order, the biological order, from which everything is derived. Now, Christians believe that's because God set it up that way. But also, scientists believe that because it's true, and there's no debating that it's true, okay? And so, it would stand to reason that the deepest desire of the human heart, of course, is to reproduce. That's the whole point, right? That is the story of evolution and biology, is to reproduce, to pass on your genes. And you get to a certain age, and you've done that, and so the most pressing agenda on your list is to have grandchildren before you die. And so if they're telling you, no, what you really want, no, you got that wrong. In fact, a million years of human civilization has got it totally wrong. We just figured it out about 18 months ago. What you really want is to castrate your children, and then you'll have no hope of passing on your genes, and then you'll be happy. By the way, they don't buy this in real countries like China. They're like, yeah, okay, yeah, all right. It's like green energy. You think the Chinese believe in green energy? Right. They're buying your coal because they don't. Not for one second. They're like, oh, the whites want wind farms. Let's make some more. This is why everyone hates the Chinese. I do not hate the Chinese. They're doing what they think is in their best interest. I mean, I don't want to live in China, okay, at all. I detest the fact it's an atheist society. There's a lot about China I don't like. I hate the way they treat animals. But I hate that, actually. But one thing I admire about China is they act in China's interest. I'm sorry, I can't complain about that. That's what countries are supposed to do. I wish we had leaders like that. In my country, you spend all this time hating on China. It's like, let's take out the kind of murdering people for their organs part, or the eating dogs, which are deeply offensive to me. But let's keep the part where the government acts in the interest of the nation, which is the only legitimate use of a government's power. Like, I admire that. So if they can sell you wind turbines or solar panels because you're dumb enough to send them your coal to do it, kind of in the W column for China, no? Whose fault is that? It's yours and mine. I mean, my country does exactly the same thing. So you're not going to get me to rant about China. I want to learn from China. You know, maybe you guys can get your domestic manufacturing back and go sell windmills to somebody else who's dumb enough to buy them. You should do that. I've heard Belgium is looking to expand its green energy profile. And by the way, you could do that because you don't need anything. You have, if there's one like sincere criticism of Australians I would level after 2.5 weeks here, way too happy. It's such a happy country that people don't pause, A, to consider how bad it could be. They don't. And B, they don't really, with respect, in the U.S. the same way, they don't really appreciate how great it is. They really don't. They don't. If you were designing a country, what would you want? Well, the first thing you would want is natural resources. Okay? That's the most important thing. The most important thing, and this may be news here in Melbourne, is not banking. It's not. Banking doesn't make an economy. Banking is, in some sense, possibly a necessary feature of advanced economies, but it's not integral to any economy. Loaning money and interest actually used to be considered disgusting. In fact, it was illegal. It still is illegal in some places. So the idea that we've made that like the apogee of human achievement, lending money. No, it's not. No, making things is the point of life. Making things is the point of life. And in order to make things, you need resources. And you have more resources than you could ever use. For the next 1,000 years, you're totally set. You need nothing. You've got more than enough land. There's nobody here. There's nobody here. I've flown over beaches recently. I was like, what, was someone going to build a Club Med there or what? I just saw like 30 miles of beautiful coastline. In my country, people would be murdered over the rights to that. Here, it's just like, oh yeah, we got a lot of that. Like, no one lives here. You lead the world in resources, in gas, in bauxite, which is kind of important, actually, in iron ore, in coal, in lead, in gold, you name it, copper, you've got it. The rest of the world, uranium, oh my gosh, whoever said that, thank you. I totally forgot about uranium. I think of the deepest reserves in the world here. Did you say Wanka? I don't think that's a natural resource, but maybe it is. I got to look that up, actually. The point is, you don't need Great Britain. You don't need any other country. You could, honestly, kind of run the world. You've got no real poverty. No, I mean, there are poor people here, but you don't have dense concentrations of poverty that I've seen in 7 separate cities, and I look for it. You don't. You will, but you don't now. You've got a very well-educated and impressive and smart population. Like, what don't you have? You don't need anybody around. You should be running the world. I mean, I personally would immediately buy a nuclear weapon just to make that point clear to the rest of the world. I'm not kidding. Probably not going to do that. You're not even allowed to have handguns. You're probably not buying nukes. But you should get both. Sorry. I know you hate that, but I feel that way. And once you realize that, then there is absolutely no reason to let your leaders destroy the place. You just need to say no. And the first thing you do, so how does that work exactly? I was getting so upset talking to this awesome Pakistani tobacco shop guy yesterday. The poor guy, you know? It's like, anyway, it really bugged me. I had a long conversation with him about it that got so out of control that I can't repeat it here because we'll all be arrested. But he was on board. He's probably here tonight, by the way, if you're here. But how do you do that? How do you do that if you're an orderly, peaceful person, by the way? Because, you know, the problem with changing your society is it can move in super ugly directions super fast, and no decent person wants that. Now, the people running your country definitely want that. They're the ones who shot you with rubber bullets and set up concentration camps for you, in case you've forgotten. Wrecked the economy of Victoria and many other, right? I mean, the cost of that made you take the COVID shot and then ignored the injuries that it cost. Just totally ignored them. So they have no problem with force. But normal people have a lot of problem with force. I have a lot of problem with force. I'm a Christian. I mean, I'm a believer in a religion that rejects force, actually, rejects hurting other people, that calls for you to pray for your enemies. It's a little weird that they hate Christians so much, don't you think, by the way? Parenthetically, it's a little strange. If I was running a country and I don't care what religion I was, I'd want to import a lot of Christians. Just because, by definition, like sincere Christians. Because literally their religion says you're not allowed to go hurt people. Instead, you have to kind of like work hard, stay married to the same person, take care of your children. I'm like, even if I thought the religion was absurd, even if it was not my religion at all, I'd be like, let's import a bunch of those. Because they're clearly the least threatening, the most productive citizens you could possibly have. In fact, this country was built originally by Christians. All those five countries were. That's why they're great countries. That's why they have human rights. Because respecting the rights of other people is a Christian precept. It doesn't exist in non-Christian countries. I'm sorry, it doesn't. Christians are unique in that they believe that each person was created by God, and therefore his rights, the right to say what you really think, the freedom of speech, the right to practice any religion you want, the right not to be a slave, those are endowed by God, not government. Elbow didn't give you those. You were born with them. Yeah, no, I'm serious. So, like, why would they hate people like that? Those seem like, again, even if you don't agree with the religion or any religion, wouldn't you want that? And of course, they're the ones they hate most. That tells you a lot about their agenda, I would say. And I think the thing that they hate most about Christians, leaving aside the spiritual explanations, which I personally think are real, but maybe you don't, but just as a political matter, what they don't like about Christians is Christians recognize that those rights are inherent. They're bestowed by God, not people. And they can't be taken away. That's why Christians led the abolitionist movement. We don't have slavery because of Christians. And in non-Christian countries, there still is slavery. It's really simple. I'm sensing they don't teach us in Australian schools. Right, okay. The only reason we recognize that any of these human rights that we're supposedly defending are rights at all is because of Christianity. It's the only reason. That's the only reason. Who do you think defined those as human rights? Christians. Because they were Christians. So if you hate Christians, you're making me a little nervous. What exactly are we doing that's scaring you so much? Well, we're acknowledging a God above you. That's the real sin. Sorry, Jacinda Ardern. You're not God. You're just some silly lady with bad teeth. Like, stop. No, I'm really, I don't mean you harm, but I'm certainly not going to worship you. But they've set up this bizarre religion in your country is really noticeable. I'm sure you don't even notice it. Like, all these flags are flying all over the place. The transgender flag. I said to my driver yesterday, like, what is that? He's like, transgender. I can't even do his accent. I was like, is that, who puts that up? The city? So that's your religion? Really? Yeah, it is. Well, you can't worship false religions. First of all, the state shouldn't be imposing a religion on you. That is a religion. Not so different from Rome, worship our gods or we'll punish you. And the early Christians said, okay, I'll be punished then, because I'm not worshiping your gods. Happy to live next to you. I'm a tolerant person by my nature. Christians are tolerant by nature. They're not allowed to convert by force. They're not allowed to force you to believe anything, because God created you. We didn't. But the one thing I can't do, I'm not allowed to do, is worship false gods, including your transgender cult or whatever. You're transgender, you live next door? No problem. I mean, I worked in TV all my life. That's hardly the weirdest personal life I've ever seen, trust me. Totally happy to live next to people who are into freaky stuff. I don't want to hear about it, but I don't want to arrest them. But what I'm not going to do is worship them as gods, period, because I can't. So here's my quick advice to you, and I will stop. and we'll take your hostile questions maybe in a minute, but violence is never the answer. It just isn't. It doesn't make things better. I've seen a lot of conflict in a lot of different countries. No one's really improved by it ever, and often usually things get much worse. The U.S. had about the only violent revolution I've ever heard of that made things better. The only thing that works is telling the truth and bravery. And that actually does work. Total noncompliance. We used to call it, when I was a kid, in my country, we celebrated something called civil disobedience. And that was considered a virtue. Now it's considered a crime and they shoot you with rubber bullets. But back when I was a child, when, you know, the people who are now firing the guns with rubber bullets wanted to be in charge, they'd be like, no, that's the highest level of public service, is, you know, refusing to go along with unjust laws. And I still think that. I don't care whether they've changed their views. Doesn't bother me. My views will never change. You have absolutely no obligation to follow immoral laws. And you shouldn't. And so then the question is, well, why do people follow immoral laws? Like, after 30 years of telling you it's your body, your choice, one day you wake up and they're like, give me your arm and I'll inject you with something. Oh, I don't care for that. Shut up! Or I'll send you to prison camp. So why do people go along with that? And the answer is, not because they want to, but because they don't, you know, they're afraid. They don't want to be ostracized from the group. That's a huge one in Anglo countries. There's a huge premium in our culture, our common culture, in getting along with people, not being the one person being obstreperous or difficult. Like, pipe down. Just go along with it. You know, line up in an orderly way. That's a huge part of our culture. It's a great part of our culture, but that's the downside. And the other reason is that they fear being harmed. They don't want to be shot with a rubber bullet. They don't want to be arrested. They don't want to disrupt their lives, to which I would say, well, okay, but what's the alternative? And there's only one alternative, which is being destroyed and living like a slave. So the truth is, nothing changes until people are willing to face those consequences. That's just the truth. Like, what did you think this was? You really have to decide that you're not going to harm anybody, but that you are willing to be harmed. That's just the truth. You have to decide that. And if you don't decide that, I think it's very clear to me as a visitor where it's going, because I've seen it. And you have to make that decision. I'm not going along with that. With respect. I'm not going to scream at anybody. I'm not going to be nasty to anybody. I'm definitely not going to hurt anybody. But there is literally nothing you can do to make me do that. And if I need to be punished, that's fine. I will be. Most people will not do that. Most people just, you know, want to go to Bondi or whatever. They want to live their lives. I get it. I'm not attacking them. But it doesn't take everybody to change the society. If a small percentage of people firmly decide that they will not violate what is sacred to them, they will not worship false gods, they will not betray their own conscience and allow their families and their country to be destroyed, and under no circumstances will they participate in an immoral system. If a small group of people, 10% of your population, does that, I don't know, Gandhi kicked the British out of India after 300 years. It wasn't that hard. Wearing a loincloth. Actually, that actually happened. And it's happened time and again. So my strong advice to you, and I'll stop with this, remember what the consequences are, what's at stake. It's totally real. It's not your imagination. It's not your if they're telling you it's not your country, they're going to take it away from you, period. Two, you can't let that happen because it's too nice and there are future generations of Australians who have the right to live as you lived. And three, you don't have to hurt anybody, and you shouldn't hurt anybody. Hurting other people is immoral. That's why your leaders are illegitimate, because they hurt people. And that's wrong. But you have to be willing to be hurt. That's just true. Thank you. Thanks for watching our YouTube channel. We hope you'll subscribe to it. And by the way, you can hit the little bell on there and get notifications every time we produce a video. We hope you'll do that also.